IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome once again to episode 44 of the Killing It,
Killing It Podcast.
Oh, you guys sound kind of mellow today. I know, Ryan, you're like exercising at this moment.
Right? Yes, I think everybody should get on board with this trend. It's called the Ubi. It's my under desk exercise bike for all the conference calling time in the world. I am now burning calories. And yes, I did see it on an infomercial. It's awesome.
We're reaching absurdity levels now. Well, I have to laugh because my new exercise thing is I finally found a use for virtual reality I think is cool. I have a PlayStation VR that I got, and I got Beat Saber for PlayStation VR. And I actually turned the motion tracking on in the thing, and it's like a good brisk walk playing that game.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. Like swinging the lightsabers around and slacking cubes to the beat of the sides. Ridiculous workout.
Oh, wow. Technology can make your life better.
I have been super down on VR because even in gaming, I have not found anything. This is not a killer app, but man, it's good fun.
Well, is it better than Dance Dance Revolution?
Different, but I think more fun. I'm not very good at DDR, and I'm only slightly better at Beat Saber.
Very good.
So Ryan's just going to exercise during all the podcasts now.
That's exactly. And if I get particularly worked up, you might be able to tell that I'm winded.
If you sound winded, we'll just change topics.
Yes.
All right. So our first topic today, and we're going to put a link in here, is about the most trusted brands. And so of brands in America, followed by the most trusted brands by generation. So you can look at Gen Z, Millennials, Gen X, and Boomers. So I just thought it was amazing. Most trusted brand, according to this, is the Postal Service. Least interesting fact is Facebook is not on this list.
Oh, I'm shocked. I'm stunned.
What? Amazon and Google and PayPal, followed by the Weather Channel.
Well, the Weather Channel is very reliable. I mean, I think that's an important one.
And again, to distinguish the measuring stick that's being used here, it's not brand value on which the Apple brand, et cetera, would rank very high. It's the most trusted brand. And I think that's the more tangible piece of it. You know, we often have talked here on this podcast and elsewhere about how marketing and branding is not necessarily a natural strength of the technology industry. We all tend to be rather left-brained and literal, and we don't brand and market our businesses very effectively. But, you know, the best way I ever heard it described years ago was your brand is what other people would say about you if you were not in the room. That is your brand. I think as a technology company, as a solution provider, as a vendor, at whatever level you are playing in this game, have you ever stopped to think that question? And would you predict that trust would be attached to your logo name? I think this is a fascinating step.
Well, and the specific question is, do you trust this brand to do the right thing?
See, that so you've hit what I was about.
That Amazon and Google are on that list.
You've hit exactly what I was about to highlight, because I'm with you that was the big bit on this is the to do what's right. I've been beating on, I think there is a competitive advantage to be had for companies that position themselves as, we are going to stand for something and we are going to do the right thing. And I want to throw out two data points around this that I think are impactful. I've been thinking about this because I'm actually doing a presentation at Channel Partners in March on this topic. So you're getting some tidbits as they come out. The Pew Research Center did a study, and they asked the percentage who say that tech companies have a either positive or negative impact on the way things are going. tech companies have been viewed as having a positive effect on the way things are going at roughly 68% back in 2010, about 70% in 2012, 71% in 2015, and it drops 21 points when asked now, in terms of only 50% of people are saying tech companies are having a positive impact on the way things are going. 20-point drop in 4 years, that is a big deal.
And to Carl's point, thank you, Facebook.
Well, right. This is very much the big tech stuff. And, you know, if you're tracking on this, the news as we're recording this, the buzz that I'm looking at is of Apple it's come out in Reuters that Apple was considering end-to-end encryption on their devices as a feature 2 years ago. And then the FBI gets involved and says, no, don't do that because it's going to slow down investigations. And why I think they're taking such heat over it now is that they did it all in secret. The most important thing is these discussions happened all in secret. This was a decision 2 years ago. They moved in a different direction. You could be for this. You could be against this. Why is everyone upset? Because it happened 2 years ago.
So this is secret transparency.
Well, that's my argument is if you want to build trust, transparency matters. Standing for something and then being for it consistently matters. You can destroy that with one bad move, but the easiest way to destroy it with one bad move is to do it in secret. If you're open and transparent and you make a mistake, customers understand that. If you make a mistake, but you've covered it up or it's done in some back room, that breaks all the trust.
Well, and I do have to say, I'm very impressed with the technology sort of dominates at least the first five out of the 25 that are listed for various generations. Amazon's pretty much always there, Google's there, PayPal's there, except when you get to baby boomers where the technology like disappears, right? It's UPS, Hershey's, Cheerios, right? Amazon doesn't show up until like number 11 and PayPal's 21. It's just that is because even just a few years younger and Amazon and PayPal are back up to the top of the list. So
it's very true. And but there also is a longevity to that too. If you've been dealing with a long time, you have a long history with someone, with a company, I think that's gonna matter on that as well.
See, right? And I will take this down to the street level, right? If you are running a company and you expect people to pay you money for the goods and services that you provide, this is not some philosophical conversation reserved for the folks at Amazon and Apple and Cheerios, right? This matters in your world, and you have to ask yourself, what are the dimensions of your experience with customers that would create a condition in which they would say, I trust them to do the right thing? There's visual branding. There's your descriptions of your goods and services, your marketing communication. There's the actual experience of service delivery. There's follow-up. There's billing and invoicing. I'm just fundamentally convinced that in this new century, no matter how good you are at technology, no matter how brilliant your technical services might be for your customers, if you do not also professionally manage your brand and pay attention to those things, people will not pay you to do the things that they do, especially, heaven forbid, if you want to sign a long-term contract for monthly recurring revenue. If you want me to sign a contract with you for 3 years, I need to trust that you're going to do the right thing, because all the money that I've committed to you is in the future. It's not like I trust that you did the right thing yesterday. Right. I'm not signing that contract unless I trust you're going to do the right thing 2 years from now. That's not the way that we're currently managing brands in our industry, and people need to step up their game.
Right. And remember that if your differentiator is, oh, well, we have good people, or, oh, we have like, everybody says that stuff.
Right. That we all have not
right. We all know, nobody walks around and goes, oh, we hire horrible people.
Yeah, like, we have really horrible people, but our processes are awesome.
Amazing.
My technicians are all jackasses, but they're geniuses.
I mean, so you need to be really critical of yourself. It's to be honest about what these are. And And it may be at times uncomfortable to stand for something, like to make a statement and say, like, you know, we are going to do the tough thing. That can, by definition, the word tough is in there. Like, it not going to be easy. My argument is I believe doing that will pay off long term, but you need to understand that that is a long term investment, potentially with short term downfall.
Well, the other thing is that one of the things that's not really delved into much here is the fact that all of these industries exist in a context, right? So Apple, nowhere on the list. Facebook, nowhere on the list. And I think some of that is kind of, there's this context of, when I've heard about them in the news, it hasn't necessarily been a good thing. Part of it is USPS, they're basically never in the news, right? Like, so they do a decent job, but nobody ever talks about them. Nobody badmouths them. Amazon and Google, I gotta say, I'm a little surprised. So another, you know, way to look at this is, so maybe they've done a really good job of saying, hey, you know, you want to engage with us. You want to spend money. You want to partner with us. I've had positive experiences with PayPal. I don't know that I can say that about a lot of the companies on this list. Like, I don't have personal, like Tide. Why is Tide even on this list?
Because they have very fantastic unscented detergent.
My clothes are so clean. I trust Tide to.
Well, I think the other thing is that's interesting to dig into is there really are some generational differences. I mean, we've been talking about this. I mean, Gen Z trusts Marvel. Marvel and Nintendo, who right. don't even, you know, don't and really, right. And Pixar, who don't even show up for other ones. And then, you know, my favorite is Betty Crocker, you know, disappears after Gen X. So there is an element of targeting and understanding who they're speaking to that matters on this. Thinking about this and being trusted, I think really matters. And I think it's important for people to really be digging into that.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess my last thought on it is, even if you've done some things that are not spectacular, if you're working on building that relationship, it goes a long ways. Like, you can build trust out of being saying, hey, you know, let me just be honest. We screwed up. Let's move on.
Honesty matters. I will totally work with someone who screwed up and admits it and owns it far more than someone who, you know, is perfect, but then later I find out that there was an issue. That is the fastest way to destroy trust.
Yeah. See, and my last word on it is, you cannot possibly be small enough as a business that you don't have to pay attention to this. I don't care if you're one guy or if you are 15 people working in a small office or anywhere in between. This is your responsibility, and you may not like what they say when you ask, what do people say about me when I'm not in the room?
Exactly.
It might not be fun and comfortable, but you gotta ask.
Topic number two. Tech training versus traditional higher education. So we have visited this before, but you know, it this kind of, I guess, a new take on it. Is this, I guess, an essay about, you know, starts out with the premise that, hey, you know what? Tech training will never take the place of higher education. And I think, Ryan, you brought this one to the table.
Yeah. So again, we've passionately addressed this in the past, and we maintain some pretty aggressive feelings about this idea. I believe that the best way I could describe my feelings on this is, yes, thank you. May I have another? I believe continuous lifelong learning is a good thing, and it requires commitment. And I believe that all the professional certifications and on-the-job training that you can participate in are going to help you in your skills, in your career, in your business. It's one of the reasons I do a lot of the things that I do in my own business. We get paid to teach professionals how to do their jobs more effectively. I think that's brilliant. However, the one place that I will absolutely passionately agree with this article is that they're pointing out that no matter how many of those certifications you get, and no matter how well you coordinate and organize them into a field of learning, that does not take the place of what is usually referred to in the world these days derisively as a liberal arts education. which is about things like, I don't know, language and culture and society and philosophy. And I understand that none of those things that I just said showed up on your job description when you were looking for work as a professional. But I am fundamentally convinced that if you do not learn how to write well, we're all going to pay the price, right? Like, people need to know how to communicate with words and professionally, and they need to understand the concepts of the interest of others beyond themselves and their own commercial transactional priorities. I wanted to bring this article forward to kind of keep this conversation going. As an industry, we provide a tremendous amount of training. Please participate in that stuff. Please continue to learn things. But let's not walk away from the fact that a good old-fashioned liberal arts education is a fundamentally missing thing in today's essential economy. People are walking away from that, and I think you can feel the impact in the way we interact with each other.
Yeah, I've got two thoughts on this that I want to throw. The first is, we always start at these like they're an or. I mean, I look at a lot of things these days, and we always assume it's an or, right? You get skills training or higher education.
Right.
They are not mutually exclusive. Let's just
start, haven't been for me.
Right. Let's just start there. Is that you can do both? I think that's the first thing that's important to element. This does not have to be an or. It can be an and. We are capable of doing two things at the same time, and they are complementary. They provide a different set of pieces. The second is we're all looking for the quick fix to skills, right? We all need, we know we need people right now. So we say, we got to fix it, right? We need that. This is a long-term investment. We are, no matter what you do, you cannot solve this instantly. We have to be thinking about this in a much longer term than oftentimes we in business are comfortable doing. We're going to have to invest in education in and form, in all of its form, knowing that we may not get the return that we want this quarter, maybe not this year. It's going to take a long time. But if we don't do it, the problem does not get better. That we must start doing it. This is the same. Think about I'm going to use the sports analogy, right? Baseball teams are investing in scouting and investing in player development over multiple years so that they have good players later. They're not necessarily always saying, I must solve this problem on third base today. They're also saying, I must know I have third basemen available to me in 3 years, in five years.
And I guess my two points. First one would be, you know, I've gone down both tracks, as has Dave, I think, as has Ryan, that I can look back at my first higher ed experience, and that ended up in a bachelor's degree, which I still have, which I still use every day. My first technology training ended up in a certification in Windows 3.1, not 3.11 for work groups, right? And, you know, but I went down the road of proxy server, small business server, you know, Windows Server 2000, right? I did, you know, the whole thing, all of which quickly became old. Now, I still use some of that information, but not every single day. My second point is, having said all that, I'm a firm believer in this. This is how I get kicked out of cocktail parties, because I piss people off. I think than education. And higher education is included in that. This is not just the elementary school. We have an education model that assumes that at some point you can know everything there is to know. And that might have been true 400 years ago. It's not true today. And we have to stop pretending that people are going to graduate from college with a little bit of every piece of knowledge in the known universe, right? We really have to say, okay, let's cut this down to some things that we want everybody to have, and then some other things where we acknowledge pieces of this training are transitory, right? And right now, there's fads where people say, hey, go get yourself some training in AI, get that $300,000 job. That's cool. 5 years from now, that may not be the case. So we have to really be careful that we look at this from several perspectives and don't just pick one side or the other.
Well, and this entire conversation happens within the context of every one of us acknowledging the way that education is presently priced and funded and sustained on debt is complete horseshit. It's not going to sustain. It is completely out of control. We know, and one of the impetus behind this article, you know, and some of the discussion that goes with it, that I believe both sides have some fantastic ideas here. A university education is ridiculous. Things cost too much. Student debt is completely out of control. We can't solve that problem here, but what we can say is it is absolutely worth solving. And you, as a little small business person or as a director in a global enterprise, you have a responsibility to develop yourself and to develop your people and continue to move them forward. Yes, in the topic of training of the day, but also in terms of, you know, what we often refer to in this industry as soft skills. And, you know, by the way, soft skills are the way we don't get kicked out of every cocktail party. So,
I see the weakness.
These things matter. Yeah. But I happen to agree with Carl on his reason for why he got kicked out.
Why are you guys getting kicked out of cocktail parties so much?
Pissing off and teachers.
But the other reason I think this is important is there's two key elements to this. First, you need people. We've already said over and over again, you need people in your business to hire. You can't wave the magic wand and instantly they're there. So you need to do this over long term. And the second reason is you need buyers for your stuff. The way people are going to buy your stuff is as if they are in a position to do so. And education is one of the ways that they get there. It's a primary way that you get there. So I look at this as self-preservation. You need to be concerned about this because I need customers and I need employees. They're really generally the two things I need to make my business work.
Well, and you need them to like each other. Yeah. So that goes a long ways too.
Well, we can experiment in a business that they don't like each other, but I do not believe we will be in business long.
Exactly. It'll be fun, but it won't last for very long. Right. My final word on this is I hear this every single time I do a sales training in the vendor world, in the partner world, all over this industry. Every single time I do a training, somebody says, "What are you saying? I don't know how to do my job." What are you saying? I've been trained. I know how to do my job. Why do I have to go back to more training? And my cliche has always been, you know, even LeBron James practices basketball. I think if you make as much money as LeBron is making doing whatever it is that you do, I agree you probably don't need to come to my training course. But anything short of that, I think you might be able to get better at your gig.
Final topic, which I'm going to end. IT, OT, and opportunity, which is, we're going to talk about Ryan's recent blog post on the CompTIA blog on, basically, it's on utilizing digital twin technology, pro or con.
Good for you, Ryan, on a cool blog post. Tell us more about it.
So again, I think it's a very cool theory that they are using. Kudos to Dave for helping kind of birth this concept. The question is overrated and underrated, right? And they're looking at the world of technology and asking, what are the things we're paying too much attention to or that we think are true but aren't necessarily true versus those things that are emerging, up and coming, and we're not yet taking them seriously enough. I chose to focus on that second topic, and the topic is the other side of the technology world. As Carl said, there's information technology, computers and networks and servers and such, and then there's OT, operational technology, which are the devices that do work in an organization, most easily understood in manufacturing or factory environments, but also when you're talking about the trucks that are in a delivery business or the tools in a farming business, et cetera. The thing is, in the year 2020, where we find ourselves now, almost all of those things have a processor and an operating system and run software and are connected to a network. And the truth is, if they're not yet, they will be soon. As an industry, we've had just a fundamental blind spot to the world of operational technology. If it's a server, if it's a computer, if it's a network, I pay attention to it. And frankly, I want to get paid to sell you that device, to install it, to monitor and manage it over time. But when it comes to the operational technologies, everybody just goes, hey, whatever, that's not what I do for a living. Let me say three letters to you. IoT, right? In a world of the Internet of Things where everything has a processor and it's connected to the network and it transmits data and receives and executes commands. Right now, if you're an MSP, right? I was reading something recently that was talking about how the typical MSP and the number of devices under management at a customer location, and the average is somewhere between 50 and 70. Laptops, desktops, computer servers, network switches, etc. That's around 50-ish devices that the average MSP is responsible for. Except that the projection in the next 5 years is that for that very same small business, when you start adding their video surveillance cameras that are all over the place and their HVAC sensors, and you can name all the brands of these things in a smart building or a smart home. 5 years from now, the projection is that same company will have 500 devices connected in a small
business. Or more than that.
And I mean, in a mid-sized business, it's going to be 5,000 devices. My question is, are you the one who's actually selling, monitoring, and managing?
Part of this gets back to the last topic and a theme that we've talked about before, which is, are technicians too technical? Are they too much in love with the, I just want to fix things. I'm going to put my hands on a server where I can touch it and own it and you know, figure stuff out, and not enough in the school of, hey, let me help you figure out the bigger picture. Where does this fit? How can I solve your problems? I think a lot of people don't want to be in this business if what they have to do is to hold clients' hands and figure out how to make their business better. You know, how can I help you make more money? A lot of people don't see that as our job, right? Our job is to make the IoT device work and get them all connected to the network and keep them safe. Not necessarily helping you figure out how to make more money in your company.
Well, then you can do that and not be in business for very long, because people don't, I mean, the people aren't just buying stuff for the sake of buying stuff. That's the why. Answering the question of why in somebody's business is super critically important. Now, I get it. This is getting harder. The why before was just you needed a computer, right? Like, you needed it. It was kind of obvious. Now you need all of these things, and it's not always immediately obvious why you need them. And you need a different skill set to get you there. But that's the critical piece and the differentiator. That being said, I don't think that the need for people to just make stuff work is going away. I just don't think it's as valuable, and the pressure is making it less and less valuable.
Well, and so the one of the conversations that we have, right, one of our strategic clients that we've worked with for years, in addition to the existing software platforms that they've been working on for generations, they've brought to market a new platform that is essentially an operating system for smart objects, right? It is the interactive and communications environment that will govern smart things. And one of the ways that we've described this, and I think it really resonates, is that when you say the Internet of Things, you can tell who's who based on which of those things they pay attention to. Well, there's the internet, and that's what we typically do in the IT world. We can connect the network. We can make sure everything is going and that the devices are active and available. And then there's the things. The other end of this, which is all of the operational technologies in the world, do you know what they are? Do you know why they are necessary? And are you actually the one who is monitoring, managing, and professionally responsible for the performance of those devices? If you're not yet paying attention to the Internet of Things as an essential need for your focus, you're about to be a dinosaur, because this is huge. And it really does represent the best of your skills as a technology professional.
But Rhino, we've talked. That's the, in a way, we're actually overblowing what you almost said was the overrated technology. I want to flip and ask you. I want to ask you a little bit about the underrated one. Not to recycle the article, but so for a solution provider audience here that we're talking to, why do you think this is underrated, and what should they be doing about digital twins?
Yeah, well, see, this is the thing, right? The coolest manifestation of this technology, I believe, right now is this idea of the digital twin. There's many people working on this, but I think the smartest implementations of this are coming from Siemens, right? The guys who make trains and light bulbs and everything in between. Do a Google search around Siemens and the digital twin, and it'll blow your mind for a little bit. I think it's quite fascinating, but it's not just the mega architecture of the space station before I build it so that I can do the testing and simulation and make sure that it's going to work out okay. It's production environment devices that are represented, A, in the physical world where it lives, and B, in the digital world where you can keep track of everything that is happening to it. I think that metaphor for your customer's network, for your customer's business processes, for the data flow in their business applications, that mental model of the digital twin of I know what your systems look like, and now I can monitor and manage that environment and its performance in real time, that is an entirely new neighborhood of opportunity directly adjacent to what an MSP does Monday through Friday.
Okay, answer me this question then. Why is this not a rebranding of just digital data? Like, isn't a digital twin just having something to represent a physical thing? Haven't we always been doing that? Why is this not a rebranding?
Yeah, a much more visualized representation is I think the first area of importance, but it's the real-time implications of what you do with data and then what happens to it and what has changed. I find this thing to be fascinating. And again, the reason I called it underrated, when you bring it down to the street level, I would argue in 2 years, you're going to be monitoring more devices than you will be computers.
So we're out of time. So we have to set aside the digital twin, but let's come back to that, because I think people need to be able to put their hands on it. And I do like the concept that, all really great new innovations come from something.
I'm going to propose this in a real
reality.
Propose this in real time. We will do a part two potentially next time.
Nice. All righty. Thank you, gents. Please, everybody, give us a thumbs up, share it, like it, and tell all your friends. And in the meantime, we'll see you next time. This has been episode 44 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.